following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this July 29th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. We're happy to be here on this hot, sunny, beautiful Tuesday afternoon in the Auburn Opelika area. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us here on ESPN 106.7 and a jam-packed show for you today. We've got conference championship predictions. We've got a little bit of our own baseball power half hour today. We'll talk some MLB updates. We'll talk about the trade deadline. We'll talk about odds to make the playoffs. And teams who were supposed to do something and they didn't, or teams that were not supposed to do something that have. So we'll talk about that. Plus, we've got some updated bracketology way too early. A little bit of movement from Joe Lunardi, and then some more Auburn football news as practice begins tomorrow. So we'll talk all about that and more here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. But as I said, he is Christian Griffin. How are you, sir? Happy Tuesday to you.
Happy Tuesday. Man, not too many times you're going to be saying Happy July for too many times longer. This month is absolutely flown by. We've talked about it plenty of times, man. We got to go to high school media days today, and you want to talk about the awareness of, holy cow, high school football, college football, the sport of football is right around the corner. You have NFL preseason starting. This was a Thursday?
Thursday night, the Hall of Fame game.
Yep. You can watch football now. I mean, that's absolutely incredible. It's actually kind of crazy to think about as well as we wind down towards high school football season. But no, excited to be here, excited to bring what's going to be a very, very fun show, kind of bouncing around, not quite the free-for-all Friday feel, but bounce around, man. We're covering all three major sports here today.
Yep, so we got a lot to get to, and no scheduled guests. Those will get ramped back up tomorrow on the Wednesday edition of the show, and so with that, phone lines are open today. If you want to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. What's on your mind? What would you like to talk about on this Tuesday afternoon? Or you could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And we begin with some conference championship predictions for college football in the upcoming 2025 season, where J.D. Pickle, and On Three, a guy who is very well known, does an incredible job covering the sport of college football, he released his conference championship predictions. And some of these are not that outlandish. Some of these make pretty good sense, and we'll talk about those before the one conference predictions he made that might have Auburn fans just a little worried for that season opener. But let's start through what he had to say. And it's starting in the ACC, where you feel like this is fairly chalk here, but at the same time, the ACC has just been so questionable and up in the air. I mean, you had a team like SMU a year ago who was knocking on the door, made it to the college football playoff in the early time that they had been in the ACC. And so On Three says Clemson to beat Miami in the ACC to become champions, to get to the college football playoff. Your thoughts on Clemson being picked to win the ACC? And then I have a secondary question after that, Christian, but your thoughts on Clemson over Miami?
Yeah, definitely. I would probably say the second least popular of these four projections, just because Clemson is projected the 9.5 wins. They won 10 games last year. They were 7-1 in the ACC, and again had that victory over SMU in the final seconds, which sent them to the college football playoff. You feel like with Klubnik still at the helm and Dabo Swinney still at the helm, you feel like that's going to be the clear favorite throughout the SEC. I wonder where, and again, obviously he doesn't mention these because it's just the two games, but is that with Louisville not having that good of a year, because they're projected 8.5 wins, as is Miami. And so obviously he's expecting Carson Beck and Cristobal to have at least a good enough year to get to the ACC championship, which they weren't able to last year with Cam Ward. He's expecting that defense that went through the transfer portal and added a lot of guys to take a big time step up. Not quite the comparison to Southern Cal with the offense was fantastic, but the defense could not get off the field. But you could throw them in that same general category where both really, really focused on revamping that side of the football. But yeah, you feel like Clemson is going to be that clear favorite in the ACC. I don't feel like that surprises too many people.
No, I don't think so. And I'm with you, this idea that I think Louisville is a really talented football team. I think they're one that people need to keep their eye on. I'll say this too. I think Duke is a talented team and one that people cannot overlook. Not saying that they're going to make the college football playoff or anything, but I do think Duke will beat a couple of teams and could have a say on who does make the college football playoff out of the ACC. Clemson would be my pick. I think they're back to where they used to be. I think Dabo Swinney is still one of the best coaches in college football. But my secondary question here, and you kind of answered it a little bit, is with it being in this prediction from On3, Clemson over Miami, does that mean Miami gets to the playoff? Does that mean a third team from the ACC could get to the playoff? Or is this a one-bid league with the Clemson Tigers? They had, what, two last year with Clemson and SMU? And so you feel like with it being a power conference, they're going to get several teams in there.
Yeah, I mean, you feel like the ACC this year, you actually kind of feel like is going to be more respectful and more respectable than you could possibly see them in the past, just because Louisville is supposed to be better. Florida State is a big outlier that's kind of right in the middle of the pack. You have SMU in there again, who's at an 8.5 win total. And so you would fully expect it, and it would be punishment otherwise. And we saw that last year kind of answer that question of if there are two teams that are good enough and record-wise good enough, strength of schedule-wise good enough to make the college football playoff, a loss in that conference championship will not debunk them from making it to the conference champion or to making it to the playoff, like SMU was in that scenario last year, where they were the ones scheduled out. Clemson was the outside looking in. Clemson beats SMU with that field goal, but both teams make it, right? Miami at that point would have to be a 9-3 type of team. And if that's the case, there wouldn't be another 9-3 team that would jump them by having a bye week while Miami goes out and loses to the best team in the conference.
I look at Miami also. I mean, you're talking about Mario Cristobal there, who his first 2 years weren't anything great. 5-7 year one, 7-6 in year two, but they took the big jump in year three that they were looking for. Heck, they were 10-3 last year. They lost in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. I mean, they were on the outside looking in of the college football playoff. By no means is he on the hot seat. He's done exactly what he's supposed to do, but I do feel that there is a pressure on him at Miami now with Carson Beck at the helm, with a bunch of talent on that team and recruiting continuing to do what it has been doing. Miami should be a team in the 12-team college football playoff era, or even more if we do expand. Miami should be a team that makes it almost every year, given the money, the resources, everything that they have at their disposal and the direction that we're going in college athletics. Miami should make it to the college football playoff this year, but Christian, I'm just not ready to jump on that just yet. I'm not ready to put my Monopoly money on Miami to A, make it to the ACC championship game, and B, be a representative of the ACC in the college football playoff.
Yeah, you feel like Cristobal has more pressure on him as well, from the standpoint of making sure that last year was not that fluke season sure. where it's okay, well, you had a top three draft pick all of a sudden on your team for his senior year who took his name out of the NFL draft to go and play for you and make just as much money. It's Cristobal. It's the offensive coordinator's job now to prove that you could have a Carson Beck who was kind of in those conversations earlier last season but kind of worked its way out with the inefficiency and something you didn't necessarily see, but you saw the lack of arm talents with Carson Beck, especially over the middle of the field with the inaccuracies and everything like that. Then the injuries obviously played a big factor in it towards the end of the season as well. So Cristobal's definitely at that spot of making sure to his fan base, to the big-time boosters, and to himself, to his team, that it's not just that one-off season. Louisville, though, is that team that we've both kept talking about, and for those that need a reminder who that quarterback is, that's Miller Moss from USC, from the Trojans, who Auburn was in competition with, initially kind of backed off towards the end of things, but a fantastic quarterback is now going to be leading the Cardinals and Jeff Brohm's team for Louisville.
Man, this is completely random, and we're going to keep talking about these on three J.D. Pickles conference championship predictions. But I was looking at Cristobal's record at Miami and just looking at his record overall when he was at Oregon. Do you know what bowl game that Oregon competed in 2018? They were a 9-4 football team. They competed in a bowl game in 2018. Do you know what bowl game that is? I don't expect you to know it. It's completely random.
I do, but just let the fans know for me.
I just saw him typing something in his laptop. I don't know what it was.
It's not fair.
Just kidding. No. Do you know what it was? For real?
I do. But just go ahead and let the fans go ahead and tell them.
No, I don't know. I just want to prove it. No, this is so random. Oregon played in the Red Box Bowl in 2018. The Red Box Bowl. Think about that for a second.
Where are they at now in life?
Doesn't exist. I think Red Box probably went out of business. That's what I'm saying. That's why I brought this up. Think about that. You want to feel old.
You remember Red Box. Man? You'd go to the
Walgreens
pharmacy
or pharmacies or some grocery stores. Even I remember like some Winn-Dixie's back in the day used to have them sitting outside, and that was the in between of a brick and mortar movie store and streaming. It was okay, we're not going to have a whole store, but you could still pay us to rent this movie for the night or a week or whatever.
Yeah, and it was like $1. And then they started doing it with video games too, and you feel like that was when it started kind of going downhill because nobody's going to rent a video game for a week and a half.
Let's see. Redbox, the movie rental kiosk company, according to Google, has ceased operations after its parent company, Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment, filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy.
One more time?
Yeah. CSSE is their company affiliation.
Chicken Soup for the Soul?
Let's see. I'm trying to find out what year that was. That's wild. Sorry. Just got really distracted on that. The fact that the Redbox Bowl used to be a thing, and I'd completely forgotten about it. The Redbox Bowl was played first on December 31st of 2002, and the last game was December 30th of 2019.
Where was it? It was...
Oh,
was it Levi's Stadium?
Yeah, played out in San Francisco. Yep. The Red Box Bowl. How about that? Anyway, there's your fun facts for the day. We continue on talking playoff predictions from J.D. Pickle and On Three. We moved to the Big Ten. We took longer on the ACC than I thought we would. Going to the Big Ten, and if this comes true, these two teams being in it is not surprising. It's who's not in it. That is surprising. And I just can't believe that he would go this direction and just completely talk crap about my team and my favorite coach of all time here. He has Ohio State taking down Oregon in the Big Ten championship game. And the initial reaction is, wait, Penn State's not in there? You're not predicting Penn State to be in the Big Ten championship game? But let me go ahead and counteract that. What is Penn State's goal this year? What is James Franklin's goal? What does he have to do this year, you feel like?
Funny enough, he has to go 10-2 and make it to the college football playoff and then go and win it.
Win the national championship.
Nobody cares
right?
if he wins a Big Ten championship.
Exactly. That's where I was going. Is as crazy as it might be, the fact that Penn State would not be in the Big Ten championship game. Again, nobody would say, no way, Ohio State and Oregon made the Big Ten championship. Like, those are two of the best five teams in college football. But that's my point exactly, is there's a path, and at sometimes and in some scenarios, it's beneficial to not play in that conference championship game, and we know that they're going away eventually. Maybe that's the path for Penn State. Don't play the extra game. Who cares? Don't get the bye or the seeds or whatever the crap may be. Just get to the playoff and win your games there.
Just win two of three, or win one of three against Oregon, Indiana, and Ohio State.
Which they will. I mean, they'll beat Indiana. And, yeah, if you can split Oregon and Ohio State, do they get two out of three of those at home? I know they get the Indiana game at home. They don't have to go to Columbus and Eugene, do they?
No, because the Oregon game's their night out,
that's
their
right.
Whiteout game.
Oh, Penn State's going to win that game. They
have a bye week after Iowa before they go to Columbus, and then that following week back home for Indiana. So that's why their win total is 10.5, because it's essentially you beat Oregon or Ohio State.
Wow.
But even if you lose, if you split those, you could do the Penn State way and find a way to lose to Iowa or lose to Nebraska when you're not supposed to, and then there's your 10-2. You're a 9 seed overall, and then it simply becomes, all right, let's just put Ohio State and Oregon on the other side of the bracket and hope they get beat before we play them in the semis.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's the Big Ten from J.D. Pickle at On3. We'll talk about the SEC, and then we'll take a break and talk about the Big 12 and why Auburn fans may be a little upset by this or maybe a little concerned by this. He has LSU beating Texas in the SEC championship game. And again, while that wouldn't be surprising to me, it would be that's probably not the favorite because, I mean, heck, just look at the media at SEC Media Days. They didn't have LSU winning the SEC. They didn't have LSU finishing in the top three of the SEC. They had, what was it, Texas, Bama, Georgia, or Georgia, Bama?
It was Texas beating Georgia, and then I can't remember. I need to go pull it up.
I think Bama was third because I didn't agree with it.
Well, we talked about it was one of those two, and then we said that we could very easily see that flipping, but not that all three were going to make it.
I'll just say this right now. LSU is not winning the SEC. They're not. LSU is not winning the SEC this year. They might make the college football playoff, and Brian Kelly's job probably relies on that, but I just don't think, until I see it, that LSU is the best team in the SEC, therefore a top two or three team in college football.
Their schedule is Clemson, which is obviously neutral site. You then host Florida in week three. You go to Oxford on the 27th before you return home for that game. Man, I've talked about it so many times. South Carolina and LSU in Death Valley, which will probably end up being a night game.
No, I'm sure it
will. Is going to be such a fun game, yes, to watch, but it's going to be so crucial because I've talked about it. South Carolina will be 5-0. LSU could already have one. What do they look like if they have two losses coming into that game? And
you're
Lenora
telling me
Sellers,
they won't fold?
And Lenora Sellers, who's a Heisman favorite at that time, walks in to Death Valley and gives LSU possibly their third loss of the season. Could you imagine what would happen? You then go to Vanderbilt. You host A&M. You go to Tuscaloosa.
Don't overlook that A&M game at home.
No. I mean, those are back-to-back. That's three straight weeks of, I mean, Vanderbilt, yes, but then LSU, Alabama, before you go back to hosting Arkansas. And that LSU game, or the Oklahoma game, is in Norman on the 29th to end the season, man. I mean,
I don't trust Brian Kelly.
You eliminate the Clemson game. There's still two, if not three, waiting, lurking there, waiting for them to slip up.
Ain't no doubt, man. That's my take. LSU is not winning the SEC this year. I don't know who is, but I'm not putting my money on LSU. We'll take a break, and we'll talk about why Auburn fans are probably a little concerned by On3's prediction for who is going to win the Big 12, because hint, hint, wink, wink, has a lot to do with the team you're going to see in Waco, Texas on August 29th. We'll talk about that and more. We're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking On3's predictions for conference championship winners. And we talked about the ACC, the Big Ten, and the SEC, but we purposely held off on the Big 12 because J.D. Pickwood on three has TCU making it to the Big 12 championship game, which I think is a pretty bold take, but I actually kind of like it if I'm being completely honest with you. But then it's the team that lose that they lose to.
Who are they playing, Jacob?
Yeah, they're playing a team that wears green and yellow. They are the Bears.
I'm colorblind, so it doesn't help me.
Well, are you locationally challenged, directionally challenged?
They are. For how many teams?
True. Waco, Texas is where this team resides. J.D. Pickle at On3 says Baylor is going to win the Big 12, taking down TCU. And if you're an Auburn fan, you probably don't love hearing that for obvious reasons. The fact that some people, and to be fair, he's not the only one that I've seen people picking Baylor. We talked about yesterday, no team in the Big 12 has a win total higher than 8.5.
And nobody has one lower than 5.5.
Which means it's just a major cluster in the Big 12. You could put all of them on a dartboard or on the wall, close your eyes and throw a dart, and you probably got a pretty good chance of predicting the winner.
Yeah, go drive through Atlanta at 5 o'clock. That's what the Big 12 conference looks like.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a log jam there. And anybody can emerge, and if you told me right now, hey, it's this team because of this, this, and this, I'd say, oh, all right.
You'd
go, you're probably right.
Really? Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, all right, probably so. And the fact that he's picking Baylor and a lot of other people are picking Baylor, I'll say it. It should worry Auburn fans. It should have Auburn a little bit worried. And not that Hugh Freeze and the staff or the players are going to be reading into this particularly, but it just goes to show, Christian, why you have to be ready to play this game on opening night on August 29th. You cannot walk into this game and just expect to win after four quarters. This is not California, okay? And while you made that look as disgusting and gross as physically possible, you were still by far the more talented team, even at that point in 2023, okay? Even when you played that game in 2023, you were still more talented and a better football team than them. This is a whole different beast, man. You're now going up against a team that you're an underdog to, who's now getting some serious love to be their own conference champion.
They're projected to be the conference champion, and just as much as some people are surprised with the Baylor pick, you feel like the runner-up pick is just as surprising. Again, it's a little bit bold. I don't completely disagree as well, because the average college football fan saw Georgia absolutely obliterate TCU in the national championship a couple years ago. What did you hear about them last year?
And just wrote them off. You're right.
What could the average fan, if I asked 100 people that stood anywhere in the country, hey, what was TCU's record last year? I guarantee you there would be very few that said, oh, yeah, Christian, they went 9-4. They went 9-4, and their win total this year is 6.5. They're -120, so favored to go over that by just a little bit. They're -102 odds to go under 6.5, which shows you that logjam. I wouldn't have been able to told you that they were 9-4 last year. Again, with Josh Hoover at the quarterback spots, it's going to be absolutely incredible. I mean, 2024, you finished with four straight wins, including their bowl game. Now you do have a whole lot of momentum. Baylor's in there again. We've talked about at 7.5 with Sawyer Robertson. And maybe this is where that flip came from with Auburn being the underdog, right? Baylor getting a little bit more love. The confidence around the country and in the Big 12 shows you that this win total projection isn't necessarily because there's not that one good team that's going to just be that tier above everybody else. It's because there's going to be some pretty dang good football teams. But it's going to remind you a lot of the rest in peace, the SEC West of the early and mid-2000s. Because you're sitting there looking at these favorites, and Kansas is a 7.5 win projected team. Utah is 7.5. BYU, who you feel like is always in the top 25, and they always have those wideouts at night that nobody wants to go play in.
Some nasty DBs, too.
You then go have Arizona State, who made the college football playoff last year at 8.5 wins. You have Kansas State, and you have Avery Johnson, the quarterback, not the coach, that has preseason Heisman votes.
He's back.
He's one of the best dual-threat quarterbacks in the entire country who's projected 8.5 wins. And then Texas Tech is projected 8.5 as well. So even when you're looking at the win totals from this, you go back and you look at Clemson and Miami. Oh, yeah, right at two of the top three with win totals. Ohio State and Oregon. Oh, yeah, two of the top three win totals. LSU and Texas. Oh, yeah, two of the top four win totals. And then the Big 12 – It's two teams that are projected to be right in the middle of the pack. If Baylor and TCU make it to their conference championships in the Big 12, it's going to show you that this team and Baylor is, I mean, really, really good. It's going to show you that the conference, from the outside looking in, might not get the respect. But if this is what the conference championship looks like, I bet it's a really, really good conference.
Well, I'll say this to bring it back to the Auburn perspective here. If Baylor is the conference champion or even the runner-up in the Big 12, that just goes to prove how much more important the Baylor game for Auburn could be come November. This is a possible resume builder here. On paper, regardless, it'll be a good win. On a Friday night on the road to Waco, Texas, that is a good win. I don't care who it is, who you ask. I don't care if Baylor's winless. That's a good win. But if the Bears go on to win their conference championship or have any sort of say in the Big 12, and Auburn is still hanging around in November, that's one that the College Football Playoff Committee absolutely will have to look at and use in Auburn's favor.
Yeah, Auburn has two, maybe three losses as you work your way into November, hopefully only one or two. Then you sit there and, holy cow, yeah, they beat the 15th-ranked team in the country on a Friday night.
At their
place. To start the season at their place.
Yep.
Huh. You talk about a resume builder, that could be a big one right there.
That could wash out a loss in the SEC and make Auburn looking like a two-loss football team. Ain't no doubt. Shows how big that game is in Waco on August 29th. We'll talk more college football, a little college basketball coming up a little bit later as well, but we flip to the diamond and talk some baseball for a little bit. We have that coming up next here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And we're going to talk more football later on in the show to start hour two. We also have some basketball updates as well. So we'll get into all of that. I know we had a couple of texts regarding football, one about Jackson Arnold, one about a week two surprise betting favorite. So we'll get to some of that when we start the second hour. Appreciate you involving yourselves there. And the text box is open if you want to be a part of the show. 334-784-1067 is the text box number. Please send us your comments, your thoughts, questions, and things in there. We'd love to hear from you and try to read those and interact with those as much as we can at 334-784-1067. And the phone lines are open, too, if you want to call in there, 334-321-1390. But no Lindsey Crosby this week, but we do have a baseball power half hour with ourselves and talking a little MLB updates because there's a lot going on right now as we have nearly flipped the calendar to August. We are in the backstretch of Major League Baseball season, and between home run hitters and injuries and trades and players cussing out Rob Manfred, I mean, there's just so much happening around Major League Baseball right now, and this is the time of year where you've got contenders, you've got sellers, you've got some folks that are in between, you've got people who are teams who were just so far out of it they can't even comprehend, and it's just wild. But this is a fun time because this is really when the separation begins.
Yeah, it's when the separation comes. Again, you mentioned the contenders and the pretenders. You have the obvious buyers, you have the obvious sellers, you have a couple teams that are kind of right there in the mix that would like to make that one final push, right? When a team in basketball is down 15 points in the NBA or in college and they're just about to sub out their starters, but it's, hey, give us 3 minutes of everything. Try and cut this into an 8-point game. It's kind of where you're at right now for some of these MLB teams that have those 20, 25, 35% chance to make the postseason. It's kind of where you're at. And there's actually a game going on right now, and we're going to talk a little bit about one of these teams here in just a minute. Shout out to the Auburn great Gunnar Henderson, who has had a nice day, 3 for 4, has a home run, 4 RBIs, and has scored 3 runs as well. Man, it feels like it was just yesterday I was watching him hit home runs in right center field at Plainsman Park.
Yeah, you remember that play he made out there?
It was
left.
Incredible.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
I remember that one, but then I also remember the one that he made in the other game down the left field line.
See, I remember the play he made in Baton Rouge that time. You know,
see, I don't remember that one, but I do remember a couple of the other plays.
He wore the jersey so well.
He did until he took it off and signed with a major league team.
And for great reasons, of course.
But no, it's brought the average up to, what was it, 282, I saw?
I'm sure.
Which,
yeah.
284, not a bad day at the helm again as the Orioles just beat the Blue Jays 16-4.
Have we talked? They beat the Blue Jays 16-4.
Yeah.
Good. That's the AL East leaders in the Blue Jays. So I know the Blue Jays are looking for pitching for obvious reasons.
Yes,
so.
Very much so. But again, with this first segment for the MLB Power Half Hour, man, we just had to take a look at some of these odds right now. We have the current odds to make the playoffs, and then you have you compare that to the preseason odds to make the playoffs, and then we'll dive into some of those buyers, some of the sellers, and then some of the biggest possible trade targets, again, as Thursday night is the trade deadline. And so there is not much longer until you're going to see some of these really, really big names. You've seen a couple of the other, you don't want to say the mid-major trades, but definitely the ones that aren't blowing up your phone if you don't follow the MLB. Braves. Eric Fiede, baby. Woo! Injury prone. Yeah. But again, man, I'm sitting here looking at the playoff odds, and for those that can console with me for our Atlanta Braves, you started the season second overall in World Series playoff odds and in the World Series odds. The Dodgers were first, obviously, with a 98% chance to make the playoffs and a 28% chance to win the World Series. The Braves' projected record. You want to take a guess? Have you clicked on this link that I sent you yet?
I have. I haven't made it down to the Braves yet.
Okay.
I started in the American League.
Guess what their record was supposed to be this year.
Their projected record to start the season for the Braves. In terms of wins, I mean, I'll go minimal. I'll say 95 wins for the Braves.
They were projected to go 96-66.
Okay. All right.
They had a 91.1% chance to make the playoffs and a 14.5% chance to make the World Series. And it said, the thing that we will be talking about the most this season is the return of Ronald Acuña Jr. and Spencer Strider. One of those has lived up to the hype every single bit. He had a 468-foot homer last night.
Stupid.
The center fielder
Stupid.
Took 2 or 3 courtesy jogs to his right and then just stopped and was not even worth it.
It just sounds different coming off the bat, man.
You throw 89 middle-middle to Ronald Acuña Jr., you're not going to see that baseball.
No.
Again, somebody might see a black eye in left center field. But, yeah, so a 91% chance to make the playoffs right now. Projected to finish 96-66. Their record right now is 45-60. So they're projected to lose 6 more games the rest of the season, according to the preseason.
They're about to go on a tear, baby.
I have a
Watch out for the Bravos.
Yeah, I have some bad news for anybody that's still following that. The Braves, again, they are 45-60 on a 1-game win streak, baby. They have a 0.4% chance to make the playoffs now, and a 0.0% chance to win the World Series. You also, again, you're not going to clinch a bye. You have a 0% chance of basically winning your division. You have a 0.4% chance of making it, again, to the wild card, a.k.a. the playoffs. You're in fourth in the NL East. You are behind the Miami Marlins, if you could believe that or not. They're only 11 games back, while the Braves are 16 games back, sticking in the ML East, or the NL East. The Mets have a 95.8% chance of making the playoffs, with the Phillies right behind at 94.1. The Phillies have a 10.1% chance to win the World Series, while the Mets have a 9.2% chance to win the World Series. That is the highest 2 teams of any division. And so it goes to show you that the NL East is still as good as advertised, and Unfortunately, the Braves were supposed to be right in that category right about now, and this is usually when you see the Braves make that big-time push, right? When Truist Park gets hot, when the baseball weather gets hot, you see that ball jumping in the hitter-friendly ballpark, and you see what these teams are doing right now, but man, the Braves just can't find a way to get out of their own way. You feel like right now you're hoping that they're in the buying mood, but definitely not for any sort of push this year. It's definitely to try and work towards the 2026 season because your entire roster essentially is coming back next year.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, I looked through some of these divisions and some of the percentages and things on where we stand through July 28th, that being yesterday, of course. And it's some of these playoff percentages to make it and just how top-heavy some of these divisions are. Yeah. I mean, I get it. There's only a certain amount of teams, but it's like, man, look at the NL Central for a second. Look at that division just for fun. The Brewers, 63-43, they're rolling. The Cubs are on a tear right now. They're 62-44, which RIP to a Cubs legend that passed yesterday. And the Cardinals are over 500. And yet they have a 19% chance to make it to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Reds right now, who are 56-51. They're 7.5 games back, and they only have a 18% chance to make the playoffs.
Tells me, I have not looked at their record and who they've won and lost games to. Tells me they've lost a lot of division games. That's what that would tell me.
Well, it does, but every game counts the same for the...
Well, sure. Yeah, I guess that's fair.
In the majors.
Yeah, that's fair.
But still, you're 56-51. That's your fourth in the NL Central. That would put you third in the NL West. That would put you third in the NL East with a fighter's chance. That would put you borderline second or third. You'd be a game back of the AL West. So it does show you, it goes to show you how tough some of these divisions are. Man, we've talked a little bit about this, and I've talked about it off air as well. I wouldn't be surprised if you see the divisions go away. You could see the AL and the NL still keeping everything, but when you're looking at it, and we've talked about it, the NL West and the NL East are two of the best divisions in baseball. Now you throw in the AL East as well, with the Blue Jays being really good, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Orioles as a team, again, we'll talk about, gosh, that was supposed to be really, really good. Braves and Orioles fans are kind of in that same boat. There were people that projected the Braves to beat the Orioles in the World Series this year.
Yeah.
And that was something that was like, oh yeah, okay, I could see that.
Sure.
Now they're both going to be racing to Cancun and fighting over the last pool noodle before you go down the water slide. But just goes to show you, I mean, you look at it and the Giants, you feel like every single year that team where it's like, come on, man, what are we supposed to do? The Diamondbacks, who have the best offense arguably in the country but can't throw strikes, and if they do, they give up 800-foot nukes. But mm-hmm. They're that team that just has the uphill battle every single year because the Padres and the Dodgers are just going to be good.
They're
so
loaded, yeah.
You're sitting there looking at the Giants right now, who only have a 20% chance to make the playoffs, yet you feel like they're still one of the better teams in baseball. Just with that division, you feel like they're handicapped.
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah, I mean, in comparison to the AL Central, where the Tigers are 62-46, the second place team in that division who has a 15% chance to make the postseason.
And a losing record.
A losing record are the Twins. The Twins, the Guardians, the Royals, and the White Sox all have losing records right now by two or more games. That's bad. But that's not good.
But the Reds and the AL Central, they're making the playoffs.
Yeah, and so I'm with you on that. I mean, I think there is an empirist would just absolutely lose their minds, but there is a world where that could happen. I absolutely agree.
I mean, it's the same thing with the SEC 10 years ago. No way we'd get rid of the West and the East, right?
Yeah. I've even heard people go as far as talk about this in the NFL.
Yeah.
Getting rid of the divisions in NFL, too, which I think it's a little bit more balanced in the NFL.
I agree.
But I think the NFL is just a more balanced sport than baseball, top to bottom.
If there's one sport that needs to do it, it's the NBA.
You're saying put divisions in the NBA?
No, go divisionless. Just because the West is, I mean, you talk about the bronze run, and it's because of who he had to play every single year because of the East versus the West.
You're saying just take them out completely.
Yeah, just go. You're going straight record.
No East, no West. You just play an even amount of games.
You play
however
everybody.
You can play. Play everybody, what, twice, I guess? Yeah. Yeah.
That
I guess that would be.
Teams
that would
are
be
eight seeds.
When that'd they would be conference-less, right? I guess technically.
Yeah.
Since they don't, I mean, they don't have the subdivisions, I guess it would be technically conference-less.
Sure.
But I see what you're saying. You're saying just, yeah, straight up, here's all the teams. You all play each other X amount of times, and whatever the record is, boom, top 8 teams, top 12 teams, whatever.
Yeah, because you feel like the NBA you see it the most, MLB you see it as well, which is the conversation that we're having right now, which is you throw teams in any other division, and all of a sudden their playoff chances double or triple. In the NBA, you see it where teams are having to play those play-in games as a 10 seed, but you look over at the other division and it's, we'd be a 6 seed, we'd be a 5 seed right now, or we'd be hosting rather than having to play the 1 seed. So you feel like that could very easily, they would never do it.
No, of course not. Which is so wild to see the switch back and forth in the NBA from the East being dominant late 8 or 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, to then back to the West for a while, mid 2000s, and then back to the East when LeBron, or early LeBron, and then back to the West. I mean, it goes back and forth, so it's pretty crazy. But I'm with you. I think you could see that in Major League Baseball.
It's crazy to think that we're sitting here talking about college football and college sports needing to develop the NBA or the professional models with the NFL playoffs or the NBA playoffs or whatever the case may be. With that side, maybe not the NBA playoffs, but the NFL is kind of the one that's, you know, we're sitting there talking about that model. Man, imagine if the SEC and the Big Ten form that Super League where you're divisionless or conferenceless and you're just playing all of these teams, and all of a sudden the professional teams are going, man, look at the success that they're having, because it's truly the best of the best make the playoffs rather than the best of that division or the best of that conference.
Yeah, and I've seen stuff with the NFL too where, like, I saw, it's funny enough, I actually saw a graphic the other day, or it was a photo of a late season NFC standings for the NFL, and it was like my Packers and it was the Lions and somebody else, like teams that are like 4 and 5 games above 500 in the NFL, but down the stretch they're still fighting and scratching and clawing for wild card spots because a 500 team in the NFC, you know, West or whatever, was winning their divisions. And so it's just so funny, right, how some sports, the ones, it seems like right now the ones that use it are hurting from it, and the ones that don't use it are hurting from it too. And it's like, man, can we just swap these a little bit? And you remember when the SEC was talking about expanding to 16 teams, they talked about using pods.
Yeah,
remember
the
14 pods, 14 bubbles, yeah, whatever they were called. I mean, the SEC was seriously considering that because of things like baseball, because it just keeps it even.
What conference? Sorry.
What did I say?
Nothing. I was seeing if you were going to do your Carl Anthony Towns impression.
No. Not today. No, I ain't got it. We need to go to break. We'll talk more baseball, wrap up this segment, and hour number one. We'll talk about buyers and sellers. Which teams are buyers and sellers? Which players could be traded and moved around and have new homes in just a couple of days? We'll talk about that and wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, talking a little bit of baseball. Got a couple of minutes as we wrap up this segment. We wrap up the hour, and coming up in hour number two, we will talk some Auburn football news, some things that were reported this morning about Malcolm Simmons. We'll talk about that. Plus, Jackson Arnold got a text earlier about the hype around Jackson Arnold and why some are believing and why some might not be believing in Jackson Arnold. We'll talk about that. Plus, some updated bracketology, some news about Auburn playing an exhibition game in Atlanta. That's Auburn basketball. And then some more position previews. We talked some yesterday. We'll get into some more today. Of course, fall practice beginning tomorrow for Hugh Freeze and the Tigers. But we wrap up our baseball power half hour, and the trade deadline is quickly approaching. We're less than 48 hours out now from that being wrapped up and complete. And so, in your mind, Christian, just from what everybody else is saying and kind of what we've seen and heard, buyers and sellers, who do you have and why?
Yeah, I think your Red Sox are going to be a clear buying team.
Yeah, we should be.
I think that they need a lot of help on the pitching side of things. They've actually, looking at it, they're 29 and, what, 14, I believe, since trading Rafael Devers, which is something that you wouldn't have caught me agreeing with.
Didn't start that way. Well, it started that way, then it flatlined, and then, yeah, now they're back and playing really good baseball.
But I wouldn't have believed you if that was the case. You're hearing a little bit about Jaron Duran possibly being in that mix, which I know that hurts you, and I mean, again, one of the best outfielders, hitting outfielders, especially from the left-handed side in the league. But you feel like pitching is going to be the priority, especially trailing the Blue Jays and the Yankees right now. The Red Sox kind of right at that 50% mark to make it to the postseason. I think the Cubs are definitely going to be needing to be buyers. Again, you have Kyle Tucker. That's the only guaranteed year that they have with Kyle Tucker. And so you expect them to get a couple. I think they need a couple starting pitchers. You have a couple of the guys that you need, but you need guys to be able to get there to the sixth inning rather easily or rather frequently. I think they're definitely going to be in that mix. It hurts me to say. I think the Dodgers, man, the Dodgers, you feel like are buyers every single year. They need some relievers. I think that's kind of the big thing that they need. You obviously don't need any more guys in the starting lineup because it's already an all-star type of lineup. And if Shohei Ohtani can get off his mini slump right now, which wildly enough to say, we talked about him hitting 5 home runs in 5 games the other day, but the batting average has dropped under 300, which, boo, you suck, Shohei Ohtani.
Mm-hmm. You're terrible.
I think they're in that list. I think the Tigers were in that list. Man, there were talks of Paul Skeens being traded to the Tigers. And imagine having Tarek Skubal and Paul Skeens as your 1A and 1B, and the only argument being who's going to be your ace, which in that case, that's going to be your aces. But their lineup has really, really struggled as of late. And it was kind of the same story that they had last year. They made it, again, to the wild card. But the offense, man, it relied on the home run ball. This year they haven't done it as much, but they've struggled. They are 2-12 in their last 14 games. Again, you still expect them to make the postseason just because you mentioned it earlier with their lead in the AL Central. Couldn't find them. They're the only team above 500, and so you still feel like they're relatively comfortable on that side of things. And then you feel like the kind of the middle ground team, and the Reds need a couple guys. The Giants could possibly need a couple guys. I don't know what the Braves are going to do
at this point
whatsoever. I genuinely could not tell you. You feel like they want to be buyers, but they're going to have to be sellers. I'd be surprised if Marcelo Ozuna, who hit a home run last night, would be a Brave.
That's the one I've seen.
As soon as August 1st hits, I think Raisel Iglesias, Pierce Johnson are on that list as well. And so what they're going to try and get, Lord knows.
Who knows, man? It's a fun time, though, as we are in the backstretch of the MLB season and the trade deadline quickly approaching. We'll talk about it as the days go on. But hour number one is in the books. Stick around. We got a lot of Auburn news coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're staying cool out there on this Tuesday afternoon in Auburn, Opelika. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us as we get underway in the second hour of today's show. And if you missed any of hour number one, we had a lot of fun, man. We talked about some Major League Baseball. We did kind of our own baseball power half hour. We talked about some of the current odds to make the playoffs, teams who have overperformed, underperformed, and kind of somewhere in between. Also talked about the on three conference championship predictions for college football. While some of them are chalky, why some could be a surprise, and why one has Auburn fans a little worried for the season opener. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, you can always go back and catch it with the podcast version of the show. We post it every single day to our station website where you can listen to the show live or find the podcast in the podcast center at espnau.com.
Here in hour number two, we're going to pick up and continue our conversation. It's going to be a conversation all through this week, all throughout the start of college football season, but it's talking about some position previews for Auburn football as their fall practice picks up tomorrow morning. Once again, we will have boots on the ground with the interview with Coach Hugh Freeze, also that viewing window of practice. We talked yesterday a lot about the receivers, the running backs, had some conversations on the DBs and the linebacker groups as well. We're going to talk about the offensive lines, the defensive lines, the special teams units a little bit, and then the tight ends here coming up in just a little bit. Also have some updated bracketology from Joe Lunardi. Again, this isn't something that's as frequent as it is during the college basketball season, where that's almost every single week, if not every 2 weeks, as you make your way through November, December, into January. But it's around every 3-4 weeks, maybe every month and a half or so. Well, he updated it this morning. We're going to talk about some of the teams that jumped, some of the teams that slid down a little bit, as there is a new projected number one overall seed. Where is Auburn falling into that? And then also some news along the Auburn basketball side of things as they pick up another game in Atlanta. But we're starting off hour number two talking about some Auburn football, talking about some expectations for fall practice tomorrow as a receiver is going to be, or at least reported to be, in his practice jersey taking reps tomorrow, and that is Malcolm Simmons. But I am Christian Griffin. He is Jacob Goins, and we appreciate you for being here with us, whether you're picking up with us to start hour number two or whether you've been with us for the entire show, man. We appreciate everybody for being here on ESPN 106.7. Phone lines, once again, are open here in hour number two if you would like to be a part of the conversation, or if there's something else that's on your mind, the phone lines are open at 334-321-1390. That'll connect you to the studio. You can be on the phone lines. You can join the show. You can be on the line. The text box is always open as well at 334-784-1067. Any quick hitters, any single questions that you have for us that you would like us to shoot out there and be able to talk about, we're happy to answer those as well. And that's kind of where we go to start hour number two, kind of mixing in with this conversation, as Jacob, Malcolm Simmons is expected to practice with Auburn University starting tomorrow, according to a report from J.G. Tate.
Yeah, that's been the that's been the consensus that is kind of floating around, is this idea that Malcolm Simmons will be practicing, a part of the team, a guy who, of course, is one of the go-tos for Auburn in terms of the production from a year ago, and somebody that we truly believe that if he is a part of the team would be the clear number three guy between behind 1A, 1B of Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton, or vice versa. That seems to be the consensus right now, is that Malcolm Simmons will be practicing, will be a part of the team, and will be participating until further notice, right? Until something does come from this. There were reports a while back about that there was a judicial hearing that was going to be taking place for Malcolm.
Yeah, that's on August 13th at 9 a.m.
So that's coming up. So yeah, about 2 weeks from today. And so, look, in terms of the details here and what we know, what we don't know, a lot of that is murky at the moment, and a lot of that is falling behind legal walls. And so there's been a reason that, just to be honest with you, we haven't really talked about it all that much, and it's because of those reasons. The fact that there is still a lot of unknown. This is an ongoing legal situation, and we accurately and respectfully can't speak to everything. Yeah. And until we know everything, I'm not comfortable speaking to it all. And so the only way we can talk about it or have talked about it is whether he is or is not going to be a part of this football team this fall.
Yeah, again, we publicly know as much as everybody else does, doing any sort of research, Googling his name. And so until more of the legal matter comes out, we give as much as we comfortably know and report saying, and so we'll be able to confirm, and I'm sure that that will be one of the biggest topics of Auburn football tomorrow morning is, well, is he wearing that number 11 jersey? Is he out there practicing, catching balls during that media window that we will have tomorrow morning? But with the so-called confidence that we've heard in the reportings of possibly droppings of the charges and things like that, again, all of that is still very, very murky. But as of what we have heard via the reportings, he'll be out there tomorrow. And so if that's the case, that's what we're going to talk about. We talked about it yesterday as well. Maybe we have to talk about it as if he is not going to be a part of the team. Now you feel like there's a little bit more momentum. And so, man, you feel like somebody like him adds just that much more to an already stacked receiving core. You've talked about it where he's going to be that number three guy. And on most teams, you feel like the number three is a very big step below number 1A and number two. But with Auburn, when you have so many different guys, Malcolm Simmons is still somebody, if he plays football for Auburn this year, you have to find ways to get him the football. He's kind of that Jeremiah Cobb on the receiver side of things, right? Rather than that running back of, you don't know how, but he needs to touch the ball. He needs to find a way to get the football in his hands, whether it's on jet sweeps, whether it's on little curl routes, little underneath, little digs. He's got to find a way to get the football in his hands in open space, because we saw it last year. Man, he has flashes of being absolutely excellent.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And so we will get to see if that is the case tomorrow, and I'm sure Freeze will say something about it pretty generically until this all gets solved. That's about the only way that we could speak of it. But we did get a text earlier in the show, and apologies for it taking this long to get to it, but now that we are back on the football side of this conversation, we had somebody text in and ask about Jackson Arnold. The text box 334-784-1067. If you'd like to send us a text to that number, you can. And it was asking about Jackson Arnold. And it says, with as little as we've seen from Jackson Arnold, why is there so much hype around him as Auburn's QB1? Are people excited about Jackson Arnold as the starter? What are the reasons, right? Why are you buying in to Jackson Arnold? And look, I think it's a legitimate question, especially coming from an Auburn fan where you've had several quarterbacks step into this program, transfers, high school recruits, what have you, and several of them just have not worked out, right? You've seen TJ Finley transfer in from LSU. You've seen Peyton Thorne transfer in from Michigan State. Now you're seeing Jackson Arnold transfer in from Oklahoma. You had Robbie Ashford come in. You had Bo Nix step in as a freshman. I mean, you've had a lot of quarterbacks here that just have not panned out and have gone other places. Some have worked out, some haven't. And Jackson Arnold, yeah, there's really only 1 year of true stats and film and proof, right? And every single time we talk about Jackson Arnold and what he did or didn't do at Oklahoma, there's the asterisk there that always gets brought up and rightfully should get brought up about his receiving core, about the offensive line, about the offense in general that was just putrid a year ago at Oklahoma. I mean, he was throwing to walk-ons. He was throwing to the water boy. He was throwing to somebody, a grad student, who decided to sneak on the field and find a helmet in the locker. I mean, that's who he was throwing the football to. And yet, that's still a team that had a better record than Auburn last year. That's a team that knocked Alabama out of the playoffs last year. And Jackson Arnold did it single-handedly. And so, I know there are questions about him in terms of his decision-making or, you know, awareness maybe is a word to use.
Sure.
But the dude's a winner, man. He's a winner. He's been a 5-star recruit. He was highly recruited, right? Freeze claims that he was after him when he was in high school. And the guy just wants to win. And I know that that's not, that's not a great reason, because you hope everybody wants to win, but he single-handedly beat Alabama a year ago. I hang my hat on that pretty high. I put a lot of stock into that, because I'll say it, as much as Peyton Thorne got some hate, I think he had some winning mentality too. I don't think he had it to the level that Jackson Arnold has.
Well, that's what you've heard so many people talk about. It is the swagger level of the confidence and the ability to walk out there and almost let everybody know that, yeah, he's the guy. He's the quarterback. And you feel like that's a fiery way. You've heard the comparison of Jackson Arnold could be almost that little mix. I'm not sure if it was Daryl. I think it might have been Daryl Dapperich that kind of compared him to the mixture of Bo Nix and Peyton Thorne, right? Where the fieriness almost got the better of Bo Nix when he was on the field sometimes, rather than Peyton Thorne was always very calm, very cool, very collected, even making the mistakes. You could see him never fiery on the sidelines. Jackson Arnold is kind of that mix of, again, not talking talent, talking temperament, talking personality, or he's kind of right in that middle ground. And you feel like that brings the excitement. You've talked about the hype and you've talked about Alabama, and you feel like there's a lot of people outside the orange and blue that go, okay, well, Auburn simply got him because they beat the rival, right? Because it's Alabama and it's something that Auburn hasn't done in a thousand plus days. I forgot exactly what it was, but I got sent it a while ago and it kind of hurts. But it's not even the fact of comparing Auburn and Alabama from the rivalry. It's the standpoint that a quarterback with zero offensive line and zero offensive talent around him was able to say, all right, I'm going to get this one, boys. I'm going to go out and I'm going to find a way to win it for us. And he did. And arm talent has never been the question mark for Jackson Arnold. You've seen him make every single throw on the football field. You think it's the decision-making, it's the split-timing decision-making that has been a little bit worrisome. That being said, again, when you mention when you're throwing to people that you don't even remember their first name, there's going to be a little bit of hesitancy, even if you are open of, can you make this grab? Because it has to be 100% perfect. I think it's much more of the hype comparable to the Auburn receiving core and the Auburn offensive line, and then you add that with the talent and the ceiling of Jackson Arnold. Because, man, when you have the receiving core that Auburn does, it makes it to where you can be a tad late. You can be a tad inaccurate because athleticism can take over. This is not comparable yet, but when I look at the 2019 LSU wide receiver room, obviously with two of the best in the NFL right now, there's plenty of interviews with Joe Burrow saying, man, I made the mistake, but they bailed me out. But it made Joe Burrow look like the best quarterback, and he was the best quarterback in college that year. And it's just, you feel like that, you would hope that that would be where Jackson Arnold can get to, right? Where you have all of the talent, where you have everything around you, where you can afford to make a mistake or two here, yet you have the talent to where I don't have to hit you right in between the one and the eight on your jersey to complete a pass.
But I also understand the hesitancy from some Auburn fans too, because, man, let's go and look at Jackson Arnold last year, right? This is a guy that threw for 1,400 yards, had 12 touchdowns and just three interceptions. But he only threw the ball 246 times. In comparison to, just for fun, Peyton Thorne last year at Auburn, who had 21 touchdowns, but he had 9 interceptions, right? And that's a lot of the gripe for Auburn fans was the decision-making of Peyton Thorne. But he threw the ball 317 times compared to 246. It's a lot more throws. It's a lot more opportunities to turn the football over.
Sure.
But in retrospect, or I guess on the other side of things, the rushing is what people talk about with Jackson Arnold too, which is how he beat Alabama, was using his legs. Jackson Arnold, a year ago at Oklahoma, ran the ball 150 times for 444 yards and had a couple of touchdowns, right? Peyton Thorne, last year at Auburn, ran for 283 and only ran it 112 times, technically. And so the hesitancy at times with Jackson Arnold is looking at some of the results from last year, not in the wins, but in the losses. And I think respectfully, when you pick somebody up out of the transfer portal, that is what you should look at. That is what you should take in to consideration. A 30-23 loss on the road at Missouri, a 25-15 loss against Tennessee, 26-14 against Ole Miss, 37-17 against LSU, and 35-9 against South Carolina. What screams out to me in those games? They didn't score. Oklahoma didn't put up any points. 23, 15, 14, 17, and 9. It's not good enough in the SEC. And again, no. I know they were banged up. I know they were injured. And Jackson Arnold, in particular, in those games, in those losses, right, 15 of 24, 7 of 16, 22 of 31, not bad, 14 of 21, a South Carolina game. He was 18 for 36. That's a lot of incompletions, man. But he only had one turnover. He had one turnover in those losses. Just one. One interception.
He had a couple fumbles. I remember he had a...
Yeah.
That was the fumbles. Missouri game where we were watching that somewhere, and he got sacked and tried to throw it and ended up scoring with 14 seconds left. And
well, I guess only one interception. Then,
right.
I'll
which
correct
is
it on that.
The one you highlight a little bit more. The biggest thing that I would highlight in this entire conversation as we head to break is what Brent Venables said about Jackson Arnold in SEC Media Days.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest things that you sit there and look at, because for those that didn't go into it, man, so many of these coaches brush off questions about kids that entered the transfer portal, but Venables dove into Jackson Arnold in a good way and talked about him, talked about his family, and said that, man, we tried to keep him, but I don't blame him for trying to find a reset, trying to find a new home, because he did everything that he could, and said that not once was he ever upset or he wasn't proud of Jackson Arnold and what he was able to do on the field. Venables even said that we put him in an impossible situation to win. It felt like whatever he did, it was setting Arnold up to lose. And so when you have another coach talking that highly about a quarterback, that is what you need to lean on more than what you saw in the games or you're watching the bad highlights versus the good highlights. Man, take the guy that was with him in the locker room every single day, was with him on the sideline. If he says that many confident things and that many positive things, you feel like until you're seeing otherwise with Jackson Arnold wearing number 11 in orange and blue, you feel like until you see something negative like that, that's what you need to harp on.
And that's what Auburn fans are hoping for in 2025 with Jackson Arnold as QB1. And we'll get to see him in action for the first time officially tomorrow for fall practice, which begins for the Tigers on Wednesday morning. We'll take a break, come back, talk a little Auburn basketball as there is some news about the Tigers picking up an exhibition game in Atlanta, plus the latest bracketology. And then we dive into some more position previews for Auburn football as the show goes on. Phone lines are open. Give us a call, 334-321-1390.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And we're talking a little Auburn basketball for the next couple of minutes. Couple pieces of news that we wanted to go over. And the fact that Auburn announced today that they picked up an exhibition game in Atlanta will be played at State Farm Arena. They're going to be taking on Memphis this year right before the season gets started. So looking forward to that. Of course, teams typically play one or two exhibition games kind of before the season gets started. This will be on October 30th. Inside State Farm Arena, Tigers versus Tigers, Auburn versus Memphis, October 30th, inside of State Farm Arena. And I know some people won't be as excited, Christian, just because it's an exhibition game, but if history is anything here, Auburn loves playing at State Farm Arena. That Auburn loves playing in downtown Atlanta.
Well, they would be genius for it, or they are genius for it because of BP's historic run at recruiting in Atlanta. I mean, some of the best players that have played at Auburn in his tenure were from the Atlanta area, or the greater Atlanta, just outside of Atlanta. And so it's that standpoint. It's being able to make your basketball team even more known there. And it's for the fan base that lives in or outside of Atlanta, man, being able to go and watch them play. If this is something, is this ticketed?
Well, I'm sure it is.
Where can go and actually, you know,
I would hope so. With it being for, State Farm Arena,
right? Get tickets for a halfway decent price for if you can't watch them in the regular season, man. You can go and watch them right now. And from those two standpoints alone, it feels like a smart move. Much less if you end up getting a Holiday Hoops Giving game in State Farm Arena, or if it ends up working like it did last year, where you're playing in the postseason in State Farm Arena, man. I mean, being able to get reps in a gym that you obviously have a whole lot of historic success in, you feel comfortable in, but you could hopefully see it some more in the future. Why would you not try and go play in a game like that for all three of those reasons?
There's a comment on the post on X that says, why are we playing Memphis on a neutral site? That would be an electric home-and-home game or a home-and-home series. Auburn, Memphis. I don't know. I mean, I think Memphis does have a good atmosphere for college basketball. I think fans would turn out at Neville Arena to watch Memphis play.
I would agree. Didn't Auburn play Memphis in the Hoopsgiving and lose a couple years ago?
Was that in Hoopsgiving or was that in Birmingham? I can't remember. Because remember, Auburn this year, Auburn's playing in Indianapolis this year. Auburn's playing in Birmingham this year. Auburn's got to go out to Arizona this year. Auburn's playing in Las Vegas this year. Auburn basketball is going to do some serious traveling this season. Like, it's going to be kind of ridiculous, actually. The games that Auburn is going to be playing away from Neville Arena. I mean, they're going to be on a plane and buses all non-conference season.
It was. Auburn beat Memphis in 2020 in the Holiday Hoops Giving. They beat them, I think it was 75-71, and then lost 82-73 on December 10th and 22 in State Farm Arena.
How about that? Okay. Well, there you go.
Best of three, baby.
Yeah. It will also be a rematch of Maui a couple years ago. No, last year. Auburn beat Maui. That was in the championship game, wasn't it? In the Maui Invitational Championship, where Auburn just slapped them around, buddy. I mean, beat them by... the score was like... What, oh, like Auburn 15 only, or Auburn 14 or something? But they beat them by 30.
Yeah, Auburn won 90-76, I believe. But Memphis, I'm pretty positive, outscored Auburn in the second half.
Oh,
but,
I'm sure they did.
But Auburn quite literally big brothered them and just stuck their hand out, and the little brother was sitting there flailing the arms, just couldn't catch up.
Cool thing about this exhibition game in Atlanta, too, Auburn and Memphis will play for the men's side. There will also be a women's game of North Carolina and South Carolina.
Ooh.
There will be some fans there for that one, I would
think.
There
will be.
So, there you go.
Well, maybe it could be a ticketed thing where you get to go to both.
I'm sure. There's enough seats in there.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with it being exhibition games. I have a feeling that that'll be the case. So, yeah, looking forward to that. That's a great way to get the season started again. It's an exhibition game against Memphis, but if you want to go to Atlanta and see your Tigers, or you're on that side of the state and want to go check it out, you can do so. October 30th, Auburn basketball taking on Memphis in an exhibition game at State Farm Arena. We will take our bottom of the hour break, and when we come back, pick up on a talk we had yesterday about some more position previews for Auburn football as practice begins tomorrow. How about O-line, D-line, tight end, special teams? We'll talk about all that and more. We got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us. And phone lines are open. Again, if you want to be a part of the show, you can give us a call, 334-321-1390. You could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And with fall practice starting tomorrow, we started talking yesterday on the position groups that we were most focused on going into tomorrow and kind of going into the fall, right? And we talked yesterday about the DBs, about the wide receivers, the running backs, Also, I talked linebacker yesterday. That was the group that I wanted to see the most. That was the one that I have my, and still is, have my attention on going into fall practice just because of the, I don't want to say uncertainty, but kind of. I mean, just on who, what the rotation's going to look like and who's going to be your Mike linebacker, who's going to be outside and all that type of stuff. But the other positions that we did not get to yesterday that definitely want to, O-line, D-line, special teams, tight end. That's kind of where we stand right now. And so I will hit it over to you and let you pick which position you'd like to start with on just kind of highlighting where we stand, guys coming back, transfer portal additions, things like that, position that you're looking at. Where do you want to begin?
I mean, we can start with the offensive line. You feel like that's just a good spot because
we always talk about it.
I was going to say, we always talk about it. It'll probably be the one that's the least highlighted, which is something that you feel like is not usually the case for the Auburn teams. You mentioned it yesterday, but you feel like for the past 20 years, it's been, okay, this offensive line has improved.
This is the year.
This should be the really, really good unit. And last year didn't quite stand up to that expectation. But you've heard a lot about, obviously, Connor Liu. You have guys like Xavier Chaplin that are on there as well. And so you feel like this is going to be a very, very solid unit. And, I mean, that's where, again, it's where your offensive success kind of lives to grow or die with the line of scrimmage from the running game, from the passing game, to be able to have time for play action. Everything starts with the offensive line.
I'm with you on that. And you're right. I mean, we, ever since I've been in radio or it, just as a fan, it's like, yeah, I mean, this guy's coming back, this guy's coming back. And in recent memories, it's, oh, you've added this name and this name through the transfer portal. I mean, on paper, the offensive line looks good, right? I feel like we have said that every single year.
Yeah.
And so much so, last year, as I've stated several times, I incorrectly predicted that Auburn would have a top five offensive line unit in the SEC. I really just thought that that was going to be the case. I thought Connor Liu being in there, as he is again this year, was going to help that. I thought Tutaw Miller was going to make more of an impact on the outside of the tackle spot. I don't know. I felt like last year was the year for it to all come together. That wasn't the case, which is why I am hesitant to say it again this year, but I deep down secretly believe in this offensive line more than I did last year's offensive line. I just got burned a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, you should. When you're looking at it, just reading off the roster and looking at the names that are familiar, and more importantly than the names, you feel like it's the leadership group. I mean, you have Dylan Wade, who's a senior. Connor Liu is a junior. Jeremiah Wright is a senior. You have guys like Tyler Johnson, who is an underclassman as a sophomore. DeAndre Carter could get a lot of meaningful minutes as well. A redshirt freshman. You have Tutaw Miller, who is a senior. Xavier Chaplin, who you brought in from Virginia Tech, is a junior. Mason Murphy, who people are really excited about, their Southern Cal transfer, is a 6'5 senior. You have a bunch of these guys. Dylan Senda is an underclassman as a sophomore, but have all played really, really meaningful snaps, really meaningful minutes. And so you feel like there should be a whole lot of expectations for this offensive line unit, but you feel like they should be able to handle those at least to the bare minimum of the expectation of being a top half part in the SEC.
Well, let me ask you this then, or I can open this up to our audience as well by calling in 334-321-1390, the call-in number 321-1390, or the text box at 784-1067. What are the expectations? Because we have this idea every year, it seems like, and at this point, Auburn fans just want it to be good. Auburn fans just want it to not get run over and look silly when they're playing SEC teams and the quarterback to get sacked five times and it'd be immediate pressure where hope you can make a decision in a second and a half because if not, the offensive line's already collapsed. You got two guys blocking each other and the other guy's looking in the stands at his girlfriend. Like, what are the expectations for Auburn's offensive line? What would you consider a good offensive line performance this year for Auburn?
If we're not diving into the numbers, if it's not from the standpoint of 4.3 yards per carry,
no, I'm not saying all
more
that.
Of just the fact of
what, man, it should look like.
Right, it should look like the quarterback doesn't feel like every single time he drops back, the main concern is not which receiver is going to be open, but it's the, oh man, I have to watch my back. Oh, in the corner of my eye, I see that this guy already got beat off the snap. That should be the last worry for Jackson Arnold. It should not be, oh man, this read that I have to make. I'm supposed to read this left end right here, but I've already seen that it's got blown up on the inside to where I have absolutely no read. If I hand it off to Damari Alston, he's going to get tackled for a 2-yard loss. Yet this guy's going after the ball. If I keep it, I'm going to lose yards as well. The play action should be a very, very big and a very important part of the offense this year because of the RPO system, because of just the design runs that both the quarterback and the running backs are going to see, much less the slants, the go routes that you're going to see from these receivers on just pure dropbacks. But I mean, if you can get to the point where you're 2nd and 5, you're 3rd and 1, or you're 2nd and 2, man, the play action pass with the deep threats of Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton Jr., if it is Malcolm Simmons, Perry Thompson, Horatio Fields, the RPO and the play action could be the best part of Auburn's offensive game. That should be credited to the offensive line and their ability to hold blocks for 2.5, 3 seconds, to where you hear about the quarterbacks that have that mental internal clock of, okay, I got 2.5, 3 max to get rid of it. Otherwise, I'm trying to find a gap to take off and get downhill, or I'm scrambling. It shouldn't be, again, we hated on it when it happened, then all of a sudden you saw the reason why. But you look at guys like Bo Nix, that it was every time he took the snap, he's rolling out to his right, because you're getting chased every single time you drop back.
Yeah,
that's what the offensive line shouldn't. I was going to say that's what it should look like. That's the opposite of what it should look like. But it should be, man, how many times have we seen it on the Auburn side of things of, man, this quarterback has all day to throw the football. How nice would it be for that to be the case, if Jackson Arnold gets to sit there and in the pocket direct downfield for Cam or for Perry or for Eric, and all of a sudden you can see those big-time explosive plays?
Yeah, I'll keep mine simple on this. I would love for this season for there to never be a game, which is a tall task, yes, but I would love for it to never be a game on Auburn's schedule this season when we sit here on a Monday afternoon and we don't blame the offensive line.
Say that they got bullied.
They got bullied. There was no time. There were no holes. They looked confused. There was miscommunication or whatever. However you want to describe that, I would love for us to sit here for all 12 games this season and never have to blame the offensive line. I'm not saying they got to be the best in the SEC. I'm not saying that they just have to all be Sunday starters in the NFL. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying I'm tired of having to blame the offensive. I'm tired of that being a scapegoat, to be completely honest with you.
I've talked a lot about it on the NFL side of things, and when we had our interview with Keldrick Falk on SEC Media Days, it was a question that I asked him of, man, when you're on the offensive side of the ball, especially a skill guy, you're almost judged on how many times you can get the ball, right? That shows your success. On the defensive side of the ball, half the times it shows success because you don't hear your name called. Keldrick Falk might not hear his name called, especially early on, because they're going to throw doubles. They're going to chip on the outside with the tight ends and the running backs. That shows your success because you're so dominant. You're drawing so many different guys. With the offensive line, you almost hope it's the same way, right? Where you don't hear their names because that's not the holding penalties. It's not
right.
The false start penalties. You don't hear their names simply because they're just doing their job as an offensive unit. They're controlling the line of scrimmage, and you're able to move the ball down the field where the offensive line is not something that's holding you back.
Yeah, so hopefully the offensive line can be a strength for Auburn, or at minimum a neutral for Auburn. Let's move on the other side of the football, the ones that will be going up against opposing offensive lines. And I look at the defensive line for Auburn, where depth is better now than it was. I think this was a concern going into the spring. I think it was a concern going out of the spring, but Auburn was able to, with their freshman class, yes, but also bring in a couple of defensive transfers as well. I look at D-tackle, nose tackle, and defensive end, and it's really hard to look at this list and not be like, man, the potential here is incredible. I mean, we'll start with the nose tackle just for fun here. I mean, I look at Jay Hardy, I look at Quintrell Jameson Travis. I look at Jordan Crawford, the youngin. I look at Dallas Walker, the transfer. I mean, any of those guys for me, I think could absolutely play at the nose tackle spot. And whoever gets the start, cool. This is the defensive line in SEC football. Just because you don't start doesn't mean you won't play. Depth is uberly important because I hate to be this way, but somebody's going to get hurt at some point this year, and you have to have somebody to step up. So in terms of nose tackle, man, give me any of those guys. And I'm like, all right, cool, let's ride.
Yeah, I mean, again, just looking at this roster, you work your way out wide to the defensive ends, that edge position. You have guys like Amaris Williams. You have Keldrick Falk. You have guys like Antonio Coleman that could play that position in there as well. Jared Smith. Joe Frazier. Ooh. You have Malik Autry on the inside. You have Jordan Crawford. You have Darion Smith. You have Dallas Walker, Zacavius Walker, James Ash that Auburn was able to get from Florida A&M, Jay Hardy, Malik Blockton. I mean, just listen to those names. You feel like there's just so much potential. You use the term talking about the defense of just letting them go wild, letting them go buck wild,
yeah,
and simply have the mentality of, man, let's go get the football. Let's go get the quarterback. This could be one of the best units for this Auburn defense that we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the defensive tackle spot, too. Of course, the five-star freshman Malik Autry from right up the road in Opelika, a guy that is massive. I got to see him in person.
I was about to say, and you saw it firsthand of not hearing his name shows the amount of success that he has. Because
right,
even though Auburn had Omar, it was, we're running, find Malik Autry, run the other way.
Yeah, I mean, he's the big dude in the middle, and let's run away from him. And Omar had a good game, and Auburn was fine on the ground that game, Auburn High School, that is. But no, it was, let's get into the speed guys outside, and let's test the young DBs of Opelika. We ain't going after Malik Autry. And I'm telling you right now, folks, he will see the field this year. He will be, you can't keep him off of it. He's too big, too fast, too strong.
6'5", 330.
That's ridiculous, man. That was playing high school football last year.
And then you have guys like Jared Smith, 6'6", 260. Keldrick Falk, 6'6", 285.
Yeah, I put them more, I guess, more on the edge.
They
outside.
Are, yes,
I
but would just put, talking about the size
right, yeah,
in
yeah,
general,
yeah.
With even Malik, yeah, Blockton, who's the sophomore at 6'3", 300.
I mean, expect him to be competing in probably your starter at D-tackle. I think him or Zacavius Walker would be my two picks right now, probably. But don't count out Hardy or Ash either.
But the fact that we can sit here and talk about the offensive and the defensive line, we can talk about Auburn, Auburn University, the Tigers taking the field on Saturdays, well, and Friday, that both sides can control the line of scrimmage. You haven't been able to simply talk about that confidently regarding both units in quite a long time.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So I think there's a ton of depth on both interiors. Special teams, we've hit on this quite a bit. Excited to see and hear more so on what McPherson's status is going to be. We're told he's clear, told he's ready to go, was just kind of working himself back. I've seen some videos of him kicking recently, and so really hoping for him to be back to 100%, and hopefully that takes a little bit of pressure off of Towns McGough as well, who I think is still an incredible kicker and one that in high school was legitimately the best kicker in the state of Alabama, one of the best kickers in the country. And so when he was playing at Auburn High School, and following in his footsteps is Mr. Joseph Daniel, who's at Auburn High School, who is incredible and really, really good as well. And so we got him. You got Hudson Cock, who's going to be your punter, who we talked to a couple months ago here on the show. And I think it's just going to be a mix right now of kick returners, punt returners. That'll be a question asked of Hugh Freeze tomorrow, I'm sure, and throughout the fall, is who do you have most confidence in? And last year down the stretch, he joked and he was like, at this point, I just want somebody that can catch the football, because Auburn had serious issues with that last year. He joked about that in a press conference, kind of.
It was a, ha-ha, yeah. I'm serious.
Yeah, like he was pretty much like, at this point, guys, I just want somebody that can catch the football.
Just throw all 11 at the punter.
At this point, I mean, I'm sure he felt that way too at sometimes, but
just get out of the way. Other teams might average 70 yards a punt, but just somebody go out there and find a way to catch the ball where you're not sitting there. You get off the field and it's 4th and 9, and everybody has to sit there and watch the punt intently, almost like an NFL extra point now where you actually have to pay attention
to it.
You
can't get up and go get a drink.
Yeah, you can't go to the bathroom because you already scored and you guarantee 7 when you come back. You have to sit there and sit there, watch it. Please catch it. Please catch it. Please. Okay, whew. The offense can take over at the 32.
Yep, no doubt. And then tight end position really quick. You have Preston Howard, the Maryland transfer, who's stepping in, who is massive.
We regretfully kind of forgot that he made the transfer to Auburn because when we watched it A-Day, it was, who was that?
Hold on, let me check this roster.
Who was number 15 again? And all of a sudden it was, holy cow. I forgot because he was a man amongst boys. He looked absolutely incredible. They had him lining up in the slot. They had him out wide. They had him as the one back up tall for the Auburn, you know, infamously successful fade routes and stuff like that. But you want to talk about a mismatch nightmare in the red zone or on third down, he could be one of those guys.
Yeah, I think the 6-year senior Brandon Frazier will get that start.
Yes.
But it will be impossible to keep Preston Howard off the field. Same way I talked about Malik Autry. He may be the transfer, he may be the new guy, whatever, but just physically appealing is what he is in terms of what he looks like when he's out there on the football field. So there's a lot of hype, man. There's a lot of buzz around this Auburn team in terms of what positions are going to be looked at, and excited to hear what that depth chart looks like, see how it evolves over the course of fall practice. It begins tomorrow at the facility. We'll be there for Freeze's opening press conference. We'll get a viewing window of practice as well and get to tell you more about it on the show tomorrow. We need to take our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We'll come back and wrap it all up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Have just a couple of minutes before we get out of here. Reminder that the drive is coming up. They'll have you for another 2 hours, and they'll be talking more Auburn football, some basketball news in there, I'm sure, as well. And so we appreciate you being with us today. We've talked a lot about some baseball. We had a baseball power half hour. Talk some Braves updates, talk trade deadline, buyers and sellers, things like that. Also talked about, as we just wrapped up with, some more position previews for Auburn football. That's been a two-day conversation, so excited to really dive into that as the fall practice begins and the season gets closer. And a whole lot more on the show today. Also, conference championship predictions earlier in the show as well. So if you missed any of that, you can catch up with the podcast version of the show that we post on our station website for you in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com. And just kind of a look ahead for what the rest of the week holds. Tomorrow being Wednesday, we'll have Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 as Georgia football practice gets going this week as well. So we'll have a chance to talk to him about some of those other storylines, some health and injury things, and just kind of the overall feel of practice for the Georgia Bulldogs. And then it is Wednesday, which means Daryl Dapperch of Locked On Auburn in the Barn. Double D Wednesdays will be tomorrow afternoon for 30 minutes. So excited for that. Thursday will be a jam-packed show because we'll have Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC at 3:30. And our friend Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network is going to hop back on with us at 2:30 as he did all last year. And looking forward to having him on again this year, Thursdays at 2:30. So we'll talk to him about his thoughts from Auburn football practice getting started this week. And then Free for All Friday will be a true Free for All Friday.
Fun one.
As our buddy Jack Hutton's going to step in the studio for a couple of hours and do our annual Auburn football team draft. We did it a year ago. We're excited to do it again. We've done it several years now where the three of us will draft individual Auburn football teams and kind of keep track with it throughout the year. So looking forward to that on Friday.
This is actually my first.
Yeah. Wade, T-Bone was with us last year when we did it. So, yeah, you're in. You're in for a real treat, my friend.
I am. Anytime Jack Hutton's in the studio, it's a real treat.
It's a hoot and a half. So that's what's coming up the rest of the week, including tomorrow, which we'll be back 2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.